According to Rule 159 of the NA Rules, 159, we are going to elect an acting chairperson. The acting chairperson will perform the functions and may exercise the powers of the chairperson. Can I have the nomination, please? Dada Umme Mezi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My name is Humphrey Memezi. I nominate Honorable Member Lungi Nganga Qabashe as the acting chair.
Thank you, Mr. Memezi. Can I have a seconder, please?
Kali Bichoki Farai Kata nomination under the Memezi. Hello.
Mr. Farai, Madam Nganga Qabashe has been duly elected as the acting chairperson. Can you then take your seat? Thank you. Good morning. Members and our guests, thank you very much for the opportunity given to myself to stand in for the chairperson or to become a chairperson until the chairperson arrives. Let me welcome again all the members, our guests, and the Department of Human Settlements and the Department of Military Veterans. You are all welcome. Today, our agenda, we are discussing, we are having a joint meeting between the two departments that I've just mentioned, a Department of Defense and Military Veterans, together with the Human Settlements, on the qualification criteria and the guidelines on the provision of housing for military veterans. And the second item on the agenda, as members are aware, will be the briefing by the Northern Cape Department of Human Settlements on their business plan for 2017-18 financial year and the eradication of housing backlog. But we'll start with the joint meeting of the said department. I request that the Department of Defense and Military Veterans to occupy the front seat, especially the ones that are going to be presenting, joining the management of human settlements. Are we all settled so that I can allow? You can just take that chair and join them. Bring that chair closer to your colleagues. And then a reminder, we put our cell phones on silence so that we don't get disturbed. And I would like the both DGs, or I can see DG for Human Settlements, if there is a DG or a senior official from the Defense and Military Veteran, when he or she begins to make a presentation, he or she will also introduce the officials that are with him or her. Is there anything that members would like to indicate before we start? Are we all in agreement that we on the point? On that? Thank you. Okay. Let me allow members to make a introduction of themselves because we have the department that is meeting with us for the first time, the Defense and Military Veteran Department, so that they have an understanding who are the members of this portfolio committee. I think I've been duly introduced. Then I will allow the first member on my right to start the introduction.
morning, Acting Chair. We still want to hear you introducing yourself. You were only nominated, not introducing yourself, but I can continue with your instruction.
Thank you. Let me draw the line. Okay. My name is Lungi Mganga Sabashe, a member of the Portfolio Committee of Human Settlement and an acting chair for this period, or for an hour or so.
Thank you very much, acting chair. My name is Humphrey Memezi. I'm the member of the Human Settlement Portfolio. Thank you very much. Welcome to our Marital Vets. Thank you.
Kalbitso Lipita Khwara, ke member ya committee na ya masebenzi. Kalebo.
Molweni nonke, ngumbulelo Bhaga, ilungu le committee. Enkosi.
Good morning. My name is Soli Malati. I'm also a member of the committee.
Sanibonani igaba ngokukhetha amabala sifo oyilunga lekomiti.
Sanlotshani igama ngisipho Sezwe Masango, chairperson we Committee on International Relations.
Thank you very much, members, and I think it's important to indicate that member Shelembe is held up at the Transport Portfolio Committee. Thank you. And we received other apologies, and those apologies were reflected on the register. Thank you. Let me over to you, DG Human Settlement.
Good morning, Acting Chair. Good morning, members of the honourable members of the committee. From our side, I'm accompanied by my colleagues. Thank you, Chair. As officials, we are used to acting. I'm accompanied by my colleague Joseph Lishabane, who's our DDG for Programs and Project Implementation in the Department. He will be making this presentation. He will be leading us in making this presentation. I have Philip Chauke, who's also going to assist us today. Philip, we use him as a troubleshooter where there are challenges in provinces. We ask him to help us to deal with most of those challenges. Behind me is the veteran himself, and Mapisa, who is a member of the military veterans team in the department. I have colleagues from the ministry. They're sitting right behind me. I've got Milile on the far left, and then Joe sitting next to Milile in my office, and then in the ministry we have Uswazi, no Sharon. They're sitting right behind them. You've seen them, they've been in this committee for a very long time. I'm going to ask the acting DG from DMV to introduce the team as well.
Morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, colleagues. My name is Nondobe Komafu. I'm the acting DG for Military Veterans. Otherwise, in another life, I'm the DDG. With me, I have With me, I have the acting DDG for SAS, Mr. Musi, who will be doing the presentation.
What is your name? What's the Defense Portfolio Committee?
Economic support. And on my left, I have our CFO, Mr. Ndlovu. We also have, from the office of the DG, Ms. Madeleine Mwatodi. We also have from planning session, Mr. Rampele. We have from the ministry, Mr. Ngabile. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. At this point, having welcomed everybody, let me allow the real chairperson to take her hot seat. Thank you very much for the support. Welcome, chairperson.
Chair, whilst we are waiting for the chair to take a seat, we missed one part. The acting DG in the department, TMV, is not with us today because there is a bereavement at home. We were reliably informed that his father has passed away. So I just thought that is important to make that announcement. And that's why he's not here today.
Thank you very much. Maybe our thoughts first for the acting DG for DMV who has lost a family member. Morning colleagues, morning officials. I just landed from Durban. Unfortunately, I had to attend a meeting yesterday with the president and the rest of the officials. I'm here now, and I know you've already been welcome. Good to see you, officials from DMV. I don't know if you know my name. My name is Noctawi Mafu. Just for control. My name is Natawe Mafu. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlement. This meeting is long overdue. It was postponed so many times because of the programs of both committees that many a time we had to postpone. So I know that introductions have been made, so I'll just then allow the presentations to be made. But I do also know that the Minister for DMV, Mayor Nosive Mapisa Mwakula, is not well. And she would have loved to have been here herself. Every time she sees me in the house, she would always say, when are you calling us? When do you want us now? Since we've postponed that meeting. So she really wanted to be part of this presentation, but I know that she's really not well. So can we then hand over to the officials to do the presentation? Thank you so much.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members, colleagues. The presentation that we will be talking to covers in the main the criteria, the norms and standards, some of the contractual arrangements that are in place. We also felt it's appropriate not only to talk to the one dimension of the criteria and the guidelines, but rather to go beyond that and talk to where we are in terms of what is in plan, but also what the challenges are and how we are responding to those challenges, Chairperson. Perhaps, Chair, let me also confirm that ordinarily, in the past, Mr. William Gianna would be talking to this area of work. He is unfortunately hospitalized at the moment. But that's the other matter. Nonetheless, Madam Chair, allow me to proceed to indicate first the background in this regard for this.
Just as a comment, I just hope that Mr. Chiang is not hospitalized because we've overworked him in Northwest.
I will go visit him tonight, Madam Chair. I'll verify the underlying causes. I will file a report accordingly. No, Madam Chair, it is not that. The program arises from the Military Veterans Act because it makes provision for such, but also the Act enjoins both the departments to ensure that housing that is decent is availed for military veterans. Further to that, the regulations were promulgated and gazetted. The program therefore aims to do two things. One, improve the housing conditions for military veterans, including matters of tenure, of security of tenure, and quality of shelter. Secondly, the intention is to ensure that military veterans are part of the community, not only being residents, but also they can be participants in the economy going forward. Having said that, Chairperson, the criteria for qualification for this housing assistance, it's contained in the 2013 regulations. And this criteria provides that a military veteran qualifies for a housing benefit not exceeding 188,000, provided that he or she is not employed and receives a pension from the state. Add further to that, that if the individual is employed, they must be earning an income of not more than 125,000 rands per annum. That individual may not be a homeowner, but also may not have previously received a house or other housing benefit from the state. If the individual is in a spousal relationship, his or her spouse also has not received a house or other housing benefit from the state. Needless to say, these are mitigating the possibility of double dipping, so to speak, or double benefit. However, the regulations also require that the individual must be a lawful resident of the Republic, and further to that, that they must be legally competent to contract. Now, further to that, the norms and standards for the actual house, members would be aware that the Minister of Human Settlements determines the minimum norms and standards for residential structures in the country. In respect of military veterans' houses, the house may be, it's a 50 square meter house with the necessary fitting, ceiling and insulation, tiled floors, but also plastered and painted walls. The kitchen has to be fitted with enabling fittings there, the cupboards and cooking facility, solar water geyser or device thereof, electrical installations, carport, paving, and a perimeter fence for the entire property. Members would also be aware that these minimum norms and standards, are the specifications slightly above what would be otherwise a norm for the normal, fully subsidized unit. Going further, the implementation arrangements that are in place are as follows. There is a memorandum of understanding between the two departments that is solely to ensure that there's synergy, but also there's co-working between the two departments, but also to ensure that the convergence of the mandates of the two departments is properly managed. In terms of this arrangement, the identification of military veterans or eligible veterans is to be availed by the department, military veterans department, but also the top-up finance, because there's a difference between the 188 that is the value and the subsidy quantum. So the top-up thereof is provided by the Department Military Veterans to the Department Human Settlements to ensure the completion of the unit. Between the two departments, annual targets are set and agreed in line with the ordinary planning cycles. Further to that, the Department Human Settlements then commissions the development of the units, and those are provided to the bona fide military veterans in compliance with the minimum norms and standards as provided. Further to that, Madam Chair, these arrangements also ensure that there's compliance with the fiscal arrangements, whether it's the division of revenue, the PFMA, and so forth. And therefore, the departments are enjoined also to ensure that the qualification criteria is used in the selection process of the bona fide military veterans. Now, having said that, to address the socio-economic objectives, those military veterans that so seek and are able may be provided with such construction and related training. And therefore, the arrangements for such is that then the departments between them, they then avail, identify the individuals to be trained in this regard and related fields. I must emphasize that it is not in all instances that the bona fide military veterans are in a physical state to be able to participate, and therefore that's why it is dependent on their ability to so participate. I did talk about the financial arrangement. Safe to say that the Department of Military Veterans enters into a service level agreement with the Provincial Human Settlements Department. Members would be aware that Provincial Human Settlements Departments implement programs of human settlements, and therefore the actualization of the delivery is therefore through the service level agreement between the province and the Department of Military Veterans, where the provincial departments then will, so to speak, bill the Department Military Veterans to then provide that top-up funding for intended purposes. We thought let's share with the committee what is in the plan, how are we performing relative to the plan, and not just talk to the guidelines and the criteria. Madam Chair, for this financial year, the provinces, in terms of their business plans, collectively have planned to deliver 1,437 units. That is on the back also of the identified beneficiaries, which is 1,421. And these are distributed according to the provinces as indicated in the list. Now, what often happens is that the province in their business plans would indicate provision for military veterans. But post the approval of the business plans, it became clear that the beneficiaries to be accommodated, in some instances, if you look at the Eastern Cape, there is more beneficiaries that are identified than the units to be delivered. So the reconciliation then happens in project, and I'll explain that just now. Now, this year so far, we have approved beneficiaries, 1,376. Now, the quarterly performance is as indicated there. As at the end of June, we've had 111 units delivered. But Madam Chair, I can confirm that when we look at the current quarter, second quarter, albeit that we are in the middle of the quarter, we can already see some improved performance. Of course, those numbers need to be verified and so forth. However, I'll come back to the what is happening in that space of delivery. Let me confirm that this program is a very important program. However, it has its fair share of challenges. But equally so, we share the challenges not so much as excuses, but as the reality that we confront on the ground. We could see in the past quarter that in some provinces, the five provinces, there was limited activity. In fact, delivery is nil. Now, let me confirm, Madam Chair, that there is also an option that we could provide a BNG house to a bona fide military veteran with the proviso that the difference between the subsidy and the 188 will then be provided to make improvements, because we deliver the houses on an ongoing basis, and therefore you then have to make that option available. That option is not taken up quite readily, part one. Part two, while the Department of Military Veterans will confirm the beneficiaries, on the ground, those beneficiaries or the list then gets challenged, and therefore it creates a number of problems on the ground. There's also instances where military veterans occupy illegally the completed houses, so that then creates a conflict on the ground. Sorry, that fourth bullet is cohesion, not so much cohesion as in forced, cohesion as in harmony. There is therefore that lack of internal cohesion within the structures, and therefore some of the beneficiaries end up approaching the department individually. The qualification criteria relating to the income bracket 125, while it is there in the regulations, there appears to be a prima facie case that that may actually be ripe for review. When I say ripe, add inflation and related. So there's an issue around that. But also delays in contractor appointments in provinces, but also lack of implementation uniformity. Members would be aware that in some instances, provinces like Free State have been building a much bigger structure beyond the specifications. Limpopo as well had similar challenge of acting outside the norm. But, Madam Chair, let me also indicate that there are there is scope to override certain delivery provisions. So, in order to avoid abuse, provinces can apply and obtain approval to override certain provisions in order to fast-track delivery. Often, that option is not exercised. But then the institutional arrangements on the provincial level, you also find that it works much better when you have a provincial steering committee that can organize, interact in the provincial level. So when those structures are not in place, it becomes very difficult to then see to the delivery acceleration. Now, there's also the option of settling the outstanding bonds for military veterans. Now, that there's a process there that I'll talk to just now in terms of how we are dealing with that. But because that process was not always streamlined, it's only now that we are doing so. It also presented a challenge of itself. Madam Chair, the top-up arrangements, as I indicated, while there are service level agreements, but also the understanding between the departments, that's a matter that requires that we streamline and reconcile going forward appropriately. How we are dealing with these challenges, Madam Chair, these challenges were noted for some time. However, the Minister convened a dialogue with military veterans in May, a very successful dialogue, which also sought to clarify a number of issues. Therefore, the overrides that I was talking to were confirmed and how they can be implemented. That was availed, concluded. But also, the prevailing on provinces to comply with the minimum norms and standards. Because what that does, it creates then a very difficult environment. One individual would have benefited in province A, got a different benefit. In another province, they get a different benefit. It just creates a necessary tension when, in fact, the minimum norm is there. So it's important then for provinces to adhere to that. This option of allocating the BNG unit to military veterans was also canvassed because the units are being delivered on an ongoing basis. The proviso there then is that the top-up funding will then be used to enhance the unit and accommodate other cost of enhancements. Similarly, the question of settling military veterans' bonds below their value, in that case, you have to then agree with the bank and all of those issues. There are other cases, the sort of outside the norm issues that then have to be dealt with separately. So far, the some 70 bonds have been settled in this regard. Madam Chair, the beneficiation, these are issues of socio-economic participation. The beneficiation of military veterans really requires that the companies that they own are given specific provision. Now, of course, there's compliance issues with supply chain management issues, but there is regulations that enable that to happen. Similarly, how you support military veterans through provincial service centers, this was also enhanced to make sure that there is a point of contact in the province around where and how and when the military veterans can then be supported, because it becomes difficult to not know where to raise issues when required. But again, to counter this notion that we can have a program of this nature running in perpetuity, because veterans are here, they will not be here forever, and therefore the program must deliver quite quickly for those individuals. And therefore, the conclusion was that in every project, the line of reservation, the 10% reserve 10%, that you can then use to first accommodate the veterans if they happen to be in the area. That is where you then can match the approved beneficiaries vis-a-vis the delivered units. Madam Chair, I will conclude by pointing out that further to other mitigating measures, the Minister established a team of delivery facilitators. These delivery facilitators, they go to the provinces, they engage with the structures, they assist to facilitate the resolution of issues beyond the programmatic arrangements, because some of the things require speedy resolution on the ground. But also the question of military veterans building their own houses, there is a program, the People's Housing Process, then that allows for those who wish to build the houses themselves. Again, the top-up funding, the issues that I talked to, is that you want to be able to subject all of these to prevailing conditions in terms of DORA and related. Chair, this may sound like something we should have figured a long time ago, but it becomes necessary that you are then able to enroll and verify veterans going forward, because the changing of the list became a problem, but the Department of Military Veterans has dealt with that matter. There's a clear protocol how then human settlements will draw the list from the department. Madam Chair, that is the presentation in respect of what the committee sought for the department to present, but it is possible, Madam Chair, I will, through your self chair, to invite my colleagues at the DMV to also add where I may have not emphasized the issues. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Shabane. So, because I came a bit late, so the assumption is that this presentation is a joint presentation. Okay, thank you so much. And then, can I then get addition before we open up the discussion? Yes, Acting Teacher.
Honorable Chair, the additions will be done by Mr. Mutsi. Over to you, sir.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, everybody, members, colleagues. Mine will be primarily areas of emphasis and perhaps closing some few gaps where they might not have been adequately canvassed. But the Chair's summed it up. It's a joint and we therefore concur with areas that have been canvassed. Just for contextual issues of emphasis, the members would have recognized that the department is relatively a young department, the DMV, about 7 years old now, with teething problems that go along with that. It's still at a phase of completing legislation to refine it, to conform to issues that are going to really meet the needs of military veterans. As we speak now, Madam Chair and members, we are reviewing the legislation. The Military Veterans Act 18 of 2011 is being reviewed because we saw some serious gaps that also impact on housing provision. And I'm sure the members will assist us so that we complete that process and make sure that it's adequate, it's able to deal with the areas. And that's born of the fact that the department is new and it had to fix the car whilst moving, build legislation whilst delivering. That has its own problem. I think it's important to emphasize that. We are hopeful that in the next sitting of Parliament, that legislation will come, and would like to implore members of this committee to look especially on the housing areas so that we refine that legislation to be adequately expressive of the need of military veterans. Some of the areas would require to look at is that the current legislation only prescribes a provision to a military veteran. The normal question you find among veterans, which the legislation must respond to, what happens if a military veteran dies and the wife didn't have access to a house? What happens if an orphan both parents might be military veterans and often is left destitute. Those are critical socio-economic issues that require reflection, and therefore we are reviewing those areas because they must speak to where we are moving in a direction of a caring society. I felt it's important we raise those contextual issues. The second area, because of the department being new, is that we didn't have the regulations have also some challenges that we have to look at. We are busy with them, but also a policy that guides properly on delivery. So the colleagues have teased some of them, for instance, the issue of 125,000 as a threshold is not moving according to inflationary rates and all those issues, and therefore disadvantages a lot of people. And therefore they are being reviewed from a policy and regulatory regime perspective. The second area is an area of emphasis. The DMV, according to Section 5 of the Military Veterans Act and the Regulation 14 and 15, is supposed to assist the DHS to be able to deliver much more meaningfully by, among others, managing the database, what we call beneficiary management. And members would have been privy to the fact that it has been an area of outcry in Parliament, across society, that our database needs to be cleaned up. On a lighter note, it is not uncommon these days to find a 23-year-old being a military veteran. And that tells us a story. They're younger than democracy, but they're military veterans who then need houses and everything that everybody needs. So then there's an issue there. Just on a light note, but it's a serious matter. It tells us that the database is vulnerable to contamination, corruption, and other things. So those are areas that we are assisting in delivery to manage them better. And there's a process in that direction. We'd like to implore members of parliament as they do constituency work to assist us in making sure that we do not corrupt a database, because it distorts military veterans who are bona fide to get what they ought to get, especially those who brought us democracy. So we would implore that as you go to constituency work, educate, give civic education, assist us, engage stakeholders, assist communities not to corrupt our database. The third area perhaps that we also want to raise would relate to a policy matter that we want to begin to canvass strongly here for assistance and guidance. The members would know that we've got statutory and non-statutory forces. The statutory would have been the former SADF and former TBVC states. And then we have the former Liberation Army veterans, which is MKMVA, APLA, AZANLA. We have deliberately, both ministers at a policy level, made it clear that the non-statutory forces should be given priority, because we have to address the injustices of the past. Those who fought for liberation didn't benefit from the past state, and therefore it's beginning to be a contentious issue, because there are those in the statutory forces who say it is a discriminatory object, and therefore constitutionality of it is being questioned. So it begins to say we may want to speak in one voice with parliament and society to say, but it is positive discrimination, it is affirmative action, and therefore it cannot be viewed as a negative policy projection. But it has become part of the purview. For instance, what our colleague said was, we already have identified 1,421. And guided by the ministers, the emphasis was the first 1,421 for this year must be non-statutory forces. It's creating a lot of problems. We're experiencing South African Colored Corps, former conscripts of SADF, etc., saying, but this is discriminatory. And all those areas are beginning to be a policy contention that we seek to canvass, that we collectively manage. The last but one area that of as emphasis is stakeholder management. You would know, colleagues, that the area of military veterans, as we indicated, is diverse to the extent that there is associations like the South African National Military Veterans Association. Just it was a way of correction. It's not SAMVA. It is SANVA. We make this distinction because it might send a different message. According to Section 7 of the Military Veterans Act, 18 of 2011, the South African National Military Veterans Association is established by statute. It then has 8 affiliates under it, 9 statutory forces and statutory forces. And that means unity in diversity. And there's logically a lot of contention in that space, which then also means management of stakeholders in relation to who benefits first has become a very serious matter that requires collective management, not just by the department, but I think also parliamentarians in their constituency work must assist us to make sure that we've got effective stakeholder management that is in line with our objects of delivery as departments. The last part, Chair, just to close on my part as an emphasis, is we are now comfortable that young as the program is, because we started working in earnest in 2014-2015 financial year, with the joint governance mechanisms we've created with the department and better coordination emerging, we are beginning to be confident that we'll accelerate. The pace was slow with many teething problems, but we have comfort that, as my colleague said, Mr. Leshaba, that I think we are on course. But we want to believe that we will not succeed unless all stakeholders, like Parliament and everybody, comes to the party to assist us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Musi, for that valuable addition. Any other addition? Yes, did you?
Thank you, Chair. Just one little addition. I think Joseph has touched on it, but maybe it's important to bring it to the attention of the committee that we've divided our work into three regions. Mbulelo Ncedana is responsible for the Cape region, which is Northern Cape, Western Cape, and Eastern Cape. And the intention is to deal with challenges in those provinces. We don't wait for challenges to come to national. We also have Manya Maroka, who is responsible for Gauteng, KZN, and Free State, what we call Region 1. Then we have Dr. Mahapa, who is responsible for Limpopo, Northwest, and Mpumalanga, and they deal with all the stakeholders in those regions. This is over and above the fact that they are members of the task team. There is a national task team, and the three gentlemen are part of that task team, but they also act as regional program managers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. All additions being done, I'm opening the presentation for questions of clarity and questions and comments. Honorable Khurai, followed by Honorable Stole, Honorable Soli, Honorable Nangasabashe, Honorable
Chair, thank you very much, and thanks for presentation. Very straightforward. I just wanted to check on the criteria qualifications, Chair. For practical example, if I was one of the military member, but now I am member of parliament, am I qualified? Chair, the last one. If because we still have that in number of towns in that there are those military vets who died, and they died without any benefit, and now the family and they're still around. What's going to happen? because at some stage they come to us and say, but we are the members of the MKM and MKMVA, and one of our family who was a member died. What are you doing as government? Those are the two questions that I need to get. And lastly, Chair, if we can get the number of the test team, especially those members who are in the regions, so that we can actually sometimes communicate with them and get the answers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Khorai. If you are a veteran, Honorable Khorai, and you are a member of Parliament, and you earn less than 125,000, yes, you do qualify. Just simply as that. Honorable Soli?
Thanks, Chair. I think my question relates to the threshold for qualification, and Mr. Musi touched on it. But, you know, I just want to get a sense of when exactly was it established, because you'll surely agree that, you know, whenever it was that it was discussed, and now, and given annual inflation, you know, rises, there might just be an economic need to just review that figure so that, you know, it responds to the emerging economic times that we live in. But related to that is also the commitment that is in presentation with regards to the level of provision of construction training to military veterans. It is stated as, you know, a policy offer, but I'd like to get a sense of what's the performance with that, if there's been any, the provision of construction training to military veterans. And that question is also linked to, you know, what is the status quo with regards to the 30% provision in terms of housing contracts for military veterans or companies owned by military veterans, so that, you know, over and beyond the provision of houses to individual military veterans, we can see that there is sustained effort for the empowerment of military veterans through the provision of those contracts. And, you know, just to pick up from a comment that was made earlier, with regards to, you know, the legitimacy or lack thereof with regards to credentials of what constitutes a military veteran, given that, you know, in some organizations they get younger and younger. But on the real though, what measures are being put in place just for that? Because, you know, as people who live in different communities, this always causes, you know, hostility. As to who's the credible military veteran that gets, you know, the house provided by the state, and whether the weaknesses in there, whether through, you know, credibility establishment or just on the ground verification, that there's some form of movement, because there's nothing discouraging than, you know, a legitimate beneficiary being questioned on the basis of just, you know, groundwork differences, because sometimes you get a case wherein it's actually a genuine military veteran, but they might not be popular in that community. And some of the, you know, downfall you get with that is just, you know, the reality of local politics rather than the credibility of that individual. If we can get responses to that question, I'll be covered, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Stoll.
Thank you, Chair President. And thank you for your presentation. Chairperson, first of all, what I want to understand, so far how many beneficiaries have been identified by the department through these programs, especially on HPH? And then the other thing that I want to find out about, I think Mr. Musi, he touched on the issue of beneficiaries who are under 23 or 23 and above, because that's the challenge, Chairperson, that we are facing in Gauteng. the youth are going there and they want to benefit from this military veterans because they say they're supposed to benefit. That's why they fought to be a beneficiary from the different municipalities. What is going to happen? Because it is happening as we speak. And the other chairperson is that one of so far, how many beneficiaries have registered that those are the military veterans that have registered through the country? If you do have that one. And then the last one, chairperson, is that one of they said the workers have been divided into three regions. Who's monitoring those regions? Because if you check that the presentation shows that there's some regions which are not performing well. And the last one is that one of 100%, 100 square meters and 75 square meters. Free State and don't look at me. And Limpopo. They are receiving 75. And what that one is actually causing a lot of challenge and problems. What is going to, how are you going to manage this? Because at a long run, all the military veterans is going to need these 175 square meters. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Stola. I suppose the question is, even though the presentation says 1,537 has been identified for this financial year, your question wants to know how many have been identified, not only for this financial year, from the time the program has been started. Okay. I just wanted that clarity. Honorable Mimes?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much to Mr. Shabane. Thank you very much to Mulelo Musi for areas of emphasis. The presentation is quite helpful because it takes us through what you are doing. At least we can always refer now from what you have written. There are quite key things that Mr. Musi on his emphasis puts, the key thing of the importance of reviewing the legislation. So what is lacking then from us is timelines. When? How far is this thing? Because it's quite critical that it will clarify what happens to the widows, because always when we give houses, when we fight for our families, our children. So then that should be taken care of in that list. When is the question. Deadlines are always important. It's a good thing. The same thing, timelines on database cleansing. It's almost like a song that this must be taken care of. But when are we going to cross this bridge? That timelines. So we really want to believe that even in the legislation, there should be a clear clarity on the different, the affirmative part of the between the two groups, the statutory and the liberation side. So that there's no issue, affirmative action, in fact, reversing the imbalances of the past is always in the Constitution. So I think the legislation may also make it prominent. I accept the call for PCOs, MPs in the PCOs, as they engage their stakeholders to ensure that they also assist with giving this, clarifying this thing that what is constitutional, that this thing is constitutional. I think we take that request. Your first quarter presentation in the state per province, I'm not sure if it was just giving us an example, because there are provinces that didn't report, provinces such as Free State, there's zero in the first quarter, and we have done an oversight there. We did saw the military vets houses. They were beautiful, they were well fenced. So but here is zero. KZN, the same. We also had the Nova side there. So maybe you can also speak there. What is the situation in the, why is the first quarter showing two below? At least the proportion, if you divide the total number that you have given, should be around the 360, but now you are at 110. So it's not acceptable. We want performance. People want military vets are respected in all countries. So we would want to give them respect. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Memes. Probably your question is, because we were in those provinces that you mentioned in the last financial year, so the question should be, why is the performance going down instead of improving? When we were there, when there were houses, but now in this financial year, there's nothing. Probably that's how we should crush that question. Thank you so much. Honorable Makaus.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chair. Let me also join my colleagues in appreciating the report. I think it's been long overdue that we get a briefing from the department itself. But also let me also mention that this sector is one of those critical ones. When we visit the province, we actually want to see action, but not much is happening. Although one of my colleagues, Honorable Memezi, mentioned that we visited some provinces, namely the Free State and the Northwest, not much is being done in those provinces. The time that we are currently in, we were supposed to be having military veterans well taken care of, their beneficiaries well taken care of, but we're not seeing that. The targets and the deliveries are too low. Maybe the department can just mention what are the real challenges that are facing. You know, besides the issue of the beneficiaries being identified and all of that, but we want to hear the real challenges that are facing the non-deliveries of housing towards the military veterans. And during my constituency visit in the Northern Cape, I met a gentleman called Zika Kabinda, who's currently employed by the Department of Health as a driver. He heard that I sit in the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlement. He came forth to ask me, resides in the Free State, but he's been given a job in the Northern Cape as a driver for the Department of Health. He mentioned quite a number of challenges facing his family. Although he's earning a salary, but it's too low. The issue of housing, his kids not being well taken care of, and all of that. These are the type of challenges that we come across when we visit our constituencies. And it is also your responsibility as military veterans to disseminate information, let your members know what's happening within the housing projects and other projects that, you know, are benefiting them. Don't wait for, you know, politicians to go down and disseminate such information, because it might take forever. I'm just mentioning this, that military vets are seated there not knowing, are they going to get help? Are they going to just die without their beneficiaries being well taken care of? So it's very important to address that matter. Just also to touch on the issue raised by Honorable Soli, we need to get a clear number of beneficiaries identified throughout the country. Because when you look at your targets, really, it's extremely low. And you ask yourself, are these the only beneficiaries for this year, or are there other lists, upcoming lists, for the coming years? The issue of training, I don't know. Some military veterans at this stage, they are old, you know, they find themselves in the ill health has taken its toll. When we speak about training, are we training them, or are we training beneficiaries? Just tell us what type of you know, sustainable training are we talking about, or is it for them or their beneficiaries? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Makausi. Honorable Baha.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I think most of the issues have been covered, but I thought let me just make one or two comments. I think that what kind of muddies a good initiative is how we go about with actual implementation. Because mine, I think, would be firstly to make sure as to who do we want to deliver to. In a sense, who are military veterans? Because then beyond that point, we'll be able to then plan accordingly, because we are clear as to who we want to deliver to, and we'll be able to deal with issues of corrupting the process, as it were. I think that the issue of age has been already alluded to. I don't want to repeat it, which I think also kind of dilutes the whole initiative as it is intended. But Chair, let me say that at times when we implement projects, there would be unintended consequences that we come across. And one of those is that in our communities, people are able to see that someone else is getting better than the rest of us. And that creates a conflict that we have not, you know, thought of. Because we think that we're at the same level in terms of understanding the role played by the people that we want to deliver a specific service to. And so when one looks at the size of an RDP house, and next to his or her house, there's this house that belongs to a military vet, which would be 100 square meters, bigger than mine. We are all equal in this constitutional democracy, so how does it come that someone gets a big house? I'm saying that those are some of the, because when we perceive these initiatives, we think that we're at the same level. Meanwhile, we then have to deal with conflicts that we have not foreseen. So I think for me it's important to address that area, arrest it, and make sure that we don't find ourselves having to deal with it. The other point, Chairperson, is that for me, I think our emphasis should be around PHP. I think that's just my own view, that we empower military vets to build their own houses. We focus on PHP more than mixing it up with building for the people, even though it will be an integrated community, so to speak. Not to separate, but to make sure that these initiatives are followed up in terms of PHP processes. Because if we then do that, we won't be sitting, I mean, we'll do away with some of our problems that we are confronted with currently. But I think, Chairperson, most of the issues have been covered by the other members, but mine is emphasis on thinking around the PHP line and ensuring that we clean the list. I think that for me, once a list is kind of, you know, mixed up and we're not confident that it really talks to the people that we want to deliver to, we'll then have a lot of problems to deal with. For me, I think that the number of military veterans is not growing. It's not a moving target from where I'm sitting. I think we have a number of military veterans. We must just get them on the list, work on it to make sure that it's legitimate individuals who have a claim. So that as we plan on a number of houses in the financial year, we know that it's dropping the numbers that we have verified and make sure that we then have a closed and locked list, and then we work towards delivering to those individuals. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me join my colleague members on the appreciation of the joint presentation by both departments. Having said that, Chairperson, I think it's important while we appreciate the work that is being done and the progress thereof to put an emphasis that I think we need to fast track. We must try by all means to fast track, because in terms of the APP and the strategy of the minister in the human segment department, the 5,000 targets, I think the time has left. It was within the MTF period, which was within the 3 years, and it should have been concluded. If I'm not mistaken, sent to be corrected by the chairperson, it should have been concluded last financial year. And for the MTSF, we are only left with under 2 years to complete the MTSF period for the minister in office of that five years. And it's just 1 year, as I'm saying, just under 2 years, and really we are in trouble with this. And we are in trouble also because, as we have correctly said from the DMV presentation or an addition and emphasis, that the aging of the beneficiaries is a crucial one. The ill health, even those that are not yet that much aging, the ill health part is a challenge for us. Wouldn't want to allocate a house for a deceased member. Would love to allocate a house for a person while still alive, or he or she is the beneficiary still alive. And I think we must strive to do that. And my proposal, Chairperson, is that we prioritize our list of beneficiaries. Well, we have a priority list in the human settlement, and I think we should do that with regards to beneficiaries of the military vets. That those that are frail, are in a frail condition, must be on the top of the list. And those that are ill health that is still manageable, be the second on the financial list. On the priority list. And those that are living with disability also are part of those that priority list. And meaning they should be allocated houses first, other than any other member of the military band. And that's how we do. That's how we allocate in the human settlement. In relation to the deceased spouse, in relation to what you indicated, that as a caring society, in fact, it's more than as a caring society. It's a policy of human settlement. It's a policy, allocation policy for us, that an applicant, a beneficiary that is an applicant and passed on in the process, and then the family gets allocated the house. And I think there should be any difference when we allocate to military vets. This deceased spouse must immediately get a house as they were intended to, and the beneficiaries, their children or dependents, as we call them in within the human settlement, the dependents of the military vets, must also get a house, as we are doing within the human settlement allocation. and the kids falls within the priority list as well. Those dependents that are, and especially those that are underage. We are aware as human settlement that we there's a noise out there by NGOs that we create a child-headed household. But what can you do? If because children are underage, then they must be allowed to remain in the informal settlements and have being homeless. And it's a discussion between Department of Social Development, the stakeholders, their NGOs and human settlements. But while we are discussing that, we'll continue to, as human settlement, to house those children that are vulnerable, who doesn't have home. And I think we should follow that policy. There should be any difference. It's a matter of human settlement assisting the DMV department in making sure that that policy is being adhered to. Because I'm on that societal caring society that you have mentioned, socio-economic issues that you have alluded to, I just want to bring in the stakeholders under your non-statutory side of the allocation. If I come across an APLA SG, I will mention it and the others. But I've come across the Secretary General of the MK veterans to say that I was asking him, what are you doing as Secretary General with the issues that are being raised there in KZN, in other provinces, that you're, as a stakeholder, you are really not coming forward in bringing the legitimate list in time. And he was very anxious to get an information that what kind of problems are there so that he can assist. And I think even if it's an APLA, if it's an SG or General Secretary, whoever, that is Mr. Santana Ndobela, who has recently been elected. Because I'm quite aware that the department last time have reported that the KZN has come to the fore in terms of sorting out the list. But I'm still concerned that the allocation in Konubia, for instance, is not being resolved. Not unless the DG, when the DG responded, will indicate that that has been resolved. My main concern is that while that is happening, the first phase, part of the different phases of the first phase has been completed, and those members should have already been in those houses, and now they are going to be. The more we delay, the more we are going to end up in crisis. When other people are late and are unable to enjoy while they're still alive. And Chairperson, we've been in Northwest. I don't want to go back to Free State because most members have talked about Free State. It's a well-known scenario. In Northwest, the pace is very slow, but when they build beautiful houses within the norms and standards. And it's a question of fast-tracking the program. In one of the municipalities, I can't remember the name, but from your department, DG Human Settlement, will get the report from DDD Giane, there were only seven applicants that are supposed to benefit and were unable to produce that. And I know it's about the province as well as the municipality, but I'm saying in relation to fast track, and we asked DDG to get the information, and then here's the information of those. And in that province, your non-statutory members of the former MK, or the members of the military veterans of MK military veterans, they were in attendance because our portfolio meetings are a public meeting. they were in the, almost all the meetings that we had. And in fact, they thought that they would be able to make a contribution in a meeting. They were not aware that although it's a public meeting, they can only observe. But they were given a chance by the chairperson to meet with her and interact with us after the meeting. And really, it is an outcry. Really, it is an outcry from the... It's an outcry in relation to socio-economic issues, as we have outlined. And one of the members says that our policy of PHP, it's a pain to manage. But if PHP, if you manage it correctly, that's the solution for us. And in that this case, I think we should enforce the PHP in that regard. And I think, Chairperson, it's very really uncomfortable for us to read the 0-0 in about four provinces or more for this second quarter. Because we must try and pick up in the second quarter. Because, no, we are in the second quarter now, and it's towards the end. It's towards the end. It's ending end of September, the second quarter. If we don't pick up this in the second quarter, we're going to be having a problem in the third quarter. And then we must make a miracle to make sure that we pick up and we finalize everything in the third quarter, so that in the fourth quarter, we're talking about we've allocated houses, people are moving in, and we're finalizing the paperwork that we can now safely say we've built and we've done this. And I'm really pleading, Chairperson, that you must formalize this, otherwise we are really in a problem. In fact, for both ministers, they are going to be in a problem in December, because this is in the manifesto of the ruling party. And the governing party, and that ruling party, and the governing party is going to its national conference in December this year, 2017. And the both ministers, Human Settlement and the DMV, Defence and Military Veteran Minister, are going to be in trouble when those resolutions are being evaluated and being assessed and being revisited, that we're unable to, if we are not able to meet that we should have reported in December that we have concluded, because this is not a moving target. If it's 5,000, it's 5,000, it's not increasing. It's not increasing. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm done, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honourable Members. Maybe it's important to put into context the reason why we called for these joint meetings before you respond. That we, as the Portfolio Committee, were a bit unhappy with the pace of this delivery. As Honorable Ngangacabashe correctly put it, when we came into this term, one of the major areas that the minister put on in the MTSF was the fact that this target of building houses for military veterans is something that can be done and be cleared quickly, because the number is less than 5,000. We just wanted to stress that. And throughout the financial years, we have been very unhappy with the progress around this. And every time we then raised questions to our officials, it became clear that most of the challenge is because the list doesn't come forth from the DMV to the Human Settlement, and therefore unable to do the work. That's one. The second part is that, remember, the presentation itself says an MOU has been signed by the two departments
in 2012 about this. Now, you see, when you are sitting with human settlement officials and they are telling you that the list is not forthcoming, we are not able to verify that because DMV is not in the meeting. So we felt, therefore, that it's important to have this joint meeting so that at least at some point you are able to put the blame squarely where it should be supposed to be. And I thought it's important for me to raise that. That's one. Secondly, the provinces. We have already been to 5 provinces from the time after 2014 to now. We have not been happy with the progress of military veterans' houses in all those provinces. Yes, there's been glimmer of hope, there's been progress in some provinces, and then it goes down again, but generally, we haven't been very happy. And therefore, it became critical for us to have an understanding of where is this problem exactly. And therefore, it became important to have this joint meeting. But I'm very happy and comfortable with the fact that both departments are agreeing that the issue of providing construction training to military veterans has been agreed upon. But in some of the provinces, when you go, you are told that progress is being slowed down by the military veterans themselves, stopping the project. And the question then would be, have they been part of the project as it is agreed here? Why would they stop a project if they are part of the project? And for me, that's a very critical issue. Just recently in Northwest, where we've been, one of the reasons when we asked a question, why is this project not moving? And the response has been, the military veterans are the ones that are stopping the project. Now, that then begs to be clarified. How do you stop a project if you are part of it? Is this issue of PHP and military veterans being part of the project happening in all provinces? Is somebody monitoring it? I think it's critical. The presentation says all approved projects must have 10% of it put aside for military veterans. I'm not so sure if it's happening. I'm talking about human settlement now. I'm not so sure if it's happening, or at least this is something that is going to happen now. It has been happening in some, but not in all. But I just wanted us to have a sense of the urgency and appreciation of this, in the sense that we know in eThekwini the challenges that have been there, where the departments, both departments, have tried to intervene in around this issue. We agree with the area that the list needs to be cleaned. There's no argument there. And we also agree that obviously there shouldn't be double dipping. There is no way that it should. But you see, from where we are sitting, when we were told that at least there is less than 5,000, that's where we're starting from. There is less than 5,000 military veterans that need houses. That's what we were told in 2014-15 financial year. And from where we are sitting, the number that has been delivered to date is not promising. I think that's our discomfort, that if we can't clear a less than 5,000 plus minus 5,000 units from that time to now, and with all the challenges that we have, at least we should be talking about in some areas targeting plus minus 3,000, having reached a 3,000 up to now. But we haven't. That's the truth of the matter. We haven't. So
So that's the reason why this meeting has been called, so that we can then have an appreciation of the challenges that both departments have, so that we can then assist in making sure that we unblock those areas. So I thought, before I hand over to the officials to respond, they must understand why we called this joint meeting. For us, it is about the slow pace of this target, which when MTSF was presented to us, it was supposed to be something that was going to be done like yesterday. Where is the challenge? So I think probably the question that was asked by one member that says, give us the real problems so that we can understand how to assist, is where we are. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. We, in May this year, we had a workshop in Birchwood where we presented the number of statutory, non-statutory military veterans, the list of non-statutory military veterans. And this is the list that the two departments have signed off on it and agreed that these are the non-statutory military veterans beneficiaries.
The 1437.
The 1421.
Okay.
The 1421. We then ask ourselves, where are these military veterans? Because we needed to plot them spatially. And once we've done that exercise, we also ask ourselves one question. Where are the projects? So that if there is a project within a 10-kilometer radius where beneficiaries reside, then we can prioritize those beneficiaries in BMG units. This is the point that my colleague was making. Because we realize that we are not moving fast enough for the 50 square meter units. But what we can do, we can identify units. For instance, in Gauteng, if you take Gauteng, there were two projects in Gauteng which were earmarked for military veterans. Military veterans could easily get accommodated in those projects. It's Savannah City and Flairhof. And if you look at the number that we put aside for those projects, it's more than the number of non-statutory beneficiaries in Gauteng, which simply means that you could easily accommodate the 600 plus non-statutory beneficiaries in Gauteng because you have the units. They are available. You have the projects. The contractor is on site. But then the question is, why is it difficult to do that? Why is it difficult to match and place the beneficiaries on those projects that are running? Chair, I must be honest with you, I think there are teething problems. There are problems within the beneficiaries themselves. I think earlier you've talked about provinces where projects are stopped by military by beneficiaries themselves, and Gauteng is one of those projects where there's been invasions. But we don't want to use that as an excuse because we do have projects. I think provinces as well, they have struggled to run with the program. And I think this issue about the list has been with us for a very long time. And we don't want to use it as an excuse because at least in May, we resolved that problem. It's been with us for a very long time, but the two departments resolved that problem in May because we agreed that we will prioritize the non-statutory military veterans. We are aware that in this province, in the Northern Cape, and in other provinces, they do prioritize the statutory military veterans. For instance, we were told that the old colored corps, so to speak. They are being prioritized, and they were part of the statutory veterans. All military veterans would benefit, Chair, but what we wanted to do is to prioritize the non-statutory ones because they have no income. The statutory ones, they do get income, they do get pension, but we thought that it makes sense to prioritize fairly those who don't have an income, and most of them are aging. I agree with you, Honorable Kabashi, that the main issue, I think you make this point very clearly, in human settlements, we prioritize the frail. I can give you an example. I was reliably informed last week that we have managed to take care of Mama Bolo, Mr. Mama Bolo, in Nyanga East here in Cape Town. Initially, we wanted to move him to Delft, but because he's 60 and above and he's not well, he got a stroke, and we needed family support. He needed, you know, the support system, which is based in Nyanga, and to move him to Delft alone may be a little bit of a challenge. At the time, the family didn't want to move with him and leave Nyanga. But I'm told now that he has been moved. I don't know whether he's been moved to Delft or to Blue Downs. I will still have to verify that. The question of norms and standards, we need to state upfront that it is illegal to use the human settlements grant to build a 75 square meter. It is illegal to use the human settlements grant to build a 100 square meter. You can only use the grant to build a 50 square meter, not more than that. If you want to build a 100 square meter, you have to top up, use your own revenue in the province. You can use the human settlements grant to build a 100 square meter. It's not allowed by law. And there will be audit outcomes. If you use the grant to build 75 or 100 square meter, there will be, I have no doubt in my mind that the AG will qualify that department because it's not allowed. The same way that you can't use 50 square meter where the policy says 40 square meter to allocate units to ordinary beneficiaries. So I think we need to clarify that issue. It's creating a problem for us, Chair, I must be honest, because everywhere we go, all beneficiaries are asking for 75 or 100 square meter units. It's what we call pervasive incentives in the delivery of human settlements because we can't afford 100 square meter units. As much as we would love to deliver 100 square meter units to all beneficiaries, the fiscals cannot afford that. If provinces and municipalities want to top up, they are allowed, and they can raise funds from the private sector to top up. We were told in the Free State, for instance, where they are delivering the 100 square meter units, that the top up comes from the private sector, and the province has raised funds from other departments. We don't have a problem with that, but you can use the entire grant, the HSDG grant, to build a 100 square meter unit. Chair, we've done a lot of training work in Nelson Mandela Bay Metro. There's a project there called Matrosof, J2491, and the association is called Matrosof. The main issue there, which we discussed this morning between ourselves, is the whole question of how you quantify geotech variances, because they were complaining about the unit price, that the 188,000 for a 50 square meter unit is not adequate. That's what the beneficiaries were saying. They're saying that amount is not adequate because you are not even considering geotech variances, which are allowed in human settlements. And I think that's where we are, grappling with these things there. But we've trained the beneficiaries there in that project, Shady 491. We had a meeting last week with the mayor of Nelson Mandela Bay Metro, where we presented all the work that we've done on Shady 491, the training, how we've helped them with material supply. But there are glitches there. For instance, the association has changed the contractor 3 times, if my memory serves me well. And every time they change a contractor and they bring another contractor, it takes time to hand over that site to a contractor. So there are a lot of these glitches by project and by area, by province, and we deal with them. There isn't a single human settlements project that has no issues. We deal with them as they come. We were of the view, Chair, that if that 1,421 list is cleaned up and it's a list that is ready to go, we can absorb all the non-statutory beneficiaries in this current financial year because we have projects. Now, part of the problem... Let me repeat this, Chair. We have current projects that are running, and if you look at the number of units that we are delivering in this current financial year, we have contracted to deliver more than 170,000 units across the country. You only have 1,421 non-statutory beneficiaries, which tells you that that list can easily get accommodated in this current financial year. But what we picked up, is that even in that 1,421, we also picked up, we did a very quick exercise where we realized that there are people who received houses before in that list. Even in the 5,000 that you talked about, when we go in there, because we do the checks with Home Affairs, we do the checks with UIF, we do the checks with our own system, HSN system, where people get kicked out if you have received a house. They have received a house in 1999. Some of them, for instance, are saying, can you deregister us? This is the point that Natalie Shabani was talking about, that you are allowed as a province. We wrote those letters to provinces to say, if you come across all of these glitches, please submit them to us, because this is a concurrent function. The MECs can write to the minister and say, we would want to deregister these beneficiaries on this particular unit. I always use an example of one beneficiary here in the Western Cape who got a 27 square meter unit. I think it was 1998 when we were still building a 27 or 33 square meter unit. Now, you can deregister that beneficiary and then and allocate that beneficiary a 50 square meter house. But that process has to be done by the two executive authorities, by the minister and the MEC. The MEC can write and deregister that beneficiary. Because at the time, when the military veterans were given these units, we were delivering 33 square meter units. That's one option. Another option will be to enhance that unit, that 33 square meter unit. All of these things are allowed, but the challenge again is the administration of this program, which is why we do have a national steering committee, which is chaired by Gianna himself, but some provinces don't have technical steering committees, because you have to manage these things at the source where the problems are happening. So at the provincial level, we need to get those steering committees up and running, Chair. We still think that 1,421 is a very small number, and it can easily be accommodated. And I use Gauteng as an example. But in Gauteng, we put aside more than 670 units for military veterans. The non-statutory veterans are less than 500, so which means we can accommodate them in this current financial year. Chair, you've answered the question about whether the Honourable Member qualifies. I'm not going to go back to that one. We do accommodate the children. The qualifying criteria allows us to do that. We do prioritize them. We prioritize the free. But again, the issue is managing beneficiaries and then managing the delivery, making sure that the two programs are talking to each other.
We can give you a list of where the beneficiaries have been trained, and we do have that list. I think we've done well on Chetty. The 30% set aside for military veterans, it is there for every project. I mean, we've got the 30% set aside in Tavana, and I think in Flairhoff as well we have it. But again, it's how it gets managed. Again, these are all challenges at an implementation level. How many beneficiaries have been identified to date? I'll ask my colleague to respond to that question. The identification of beneficiaries is the responsibility of DMV. The allocation of units to beneficiaries is our responsibility as human settlements. There was a question about the timelines on the legislation. Umbu will respond to that question. The performance figures are not improving. You raised that question. We think, Chair, that graph is going to go up once we have signed off, at least on the non-statutory, because that's what we're prioritizing. The statutory ones, we will deal with them as well. In some provinces, you don't have a big number of non-statutory. You have a big number of statutory, for instance, Northern Cape and Western Cape, I'm told there is a big number of statutory veterans. We think that given that the country is not doing well in terms of job creation, PHP is a preferred project, because you give opportunities to beneficiaries. They're not passive participants of the products that we are creating. And if you go for PHP is more about sweat equity. It's about, it's very labor intensive. We encourage beneficiaries to use PHP. Microsoft is a PHP. It's a managed PHP. We still think that it can be managed differently. Instead of appointing a service provider to do construction for them, they can do that construction themselves, given that they have received the training. And all what is needed is to manage the material supply. So the model that they've chosen for themselves may be a little bit problematic. Chair, I will leave some of the specific questions to my colleague, Ms. Shabane, can deal with some of the questions. There were specific questions that were directed to DMV. Are we going to meet the target in this term of government? I think there is still an opportunity, Chair, to, like I said, we're delivering more than 100,000 units per annum. And if you have 5,000 beneficiaries, and this is the point that Minister wanted to drive across, in fact, she's been making this point almost in every minute, that why don't you prioritize the military veterans in the 40 square meter units that you are delivering? Then you can extend the unit over time. But get the military veterans into the units that you are delivering. If you consider the fact that we're delivering 170,000 or 100,000 units, and we only have plus minus 5,000, both statutory and non-statutory, it should not be difficult to accommodate them if we adopt that approach. And we've communicated this to MECs and provinces, we've written to them, and the AJODs. We have tried to showcase where the military veterans are and where the projects are, and we encourage provinces to prioritize those veterans. But it looks like there are still some teaching challenges. But Chair, there was a question about Konobia. I need to state this. The three regional program managers, their job is to deal with these glitches. Mbulelo, Medana, Manyemoroka, and Dr. Mahapa, they went to Konobia and they met with the beneficiaries there. And I was told that they have recommended to the MEC and to the minister on how to solve that particular problem. I'm surprised that they're not here, because I've invited them to join this meeting, the three of them. Maybe they are dealing with other issues. I think, Chair, I've covered some of the broad questions that were raised, but we still have some glitches, and the graph hasn't taken off. It's still very flat, and we're trying to prioritize at least the non-statutory this year. And I'm of the view that figure can easily be achieved, and we have been putting a lot of pressure on HODs in every performance review session. We put a lot of pressure on HODs to prioritize the veterans, but they're still complaining that in some cases the beneficiaries have benefited before. But we'll discuss that with DMV. I'm going to ask my colleague to respond to the specific question.
Thanks, Chair.
Okay.
I think the overarching concern is that the pace is slow. And I think we have acknowledged that. And the fact that now we're working closer together, because critical to the slowness to me was lack of coordination. Whether it's about beneficiary management, monitoring evaluation, systems development, etc., they were about. We didn't work closely. And I think we have comfort now that since the past 9 months, to be specific, we're working closer. So I think we've diagnosed the problem, but we also acknowledge that the sense of urgency must drive how we work together. That's the first point. The second point that we want also to reflect is timelines, Honorable Memes. I think we're beginning to be harsher on each other. It can't be business as usual. And issue of timelines, I want to say that they go beyond the purview of our work. Maybe on the legislation, because we're specific and it's a critical policy issue, legislation and database. On the legislation, we have proposed, and I think it has gone through COD and all the stakeholders, that we want it to be part of the next sitting of Parliament. That's how urgent it is, because if we crack that one, many things will come into place. The second one, the database, our target is that by the end of the financial year, we should have made a significant dent, if not conclude that part. We have solicited assistance of agencies in government, including AMSCO and them who are assisting us, because our internal capacities are not there. So we are very strict, very time conscious on it. Our target worst case scenario is that by the end of the financial year, we should have made a serious dent on that one. It can be an ongoing challenge. So we note the timelines as a critical area of work to it. The last part, one, just to close up, Chair. We believe that the issue of socioeconomic empowerment of military veterans, including not only training them, but involving them in projects, is critical. And we've intimated to that. Part of our work as a team now is to say, don't only train, but identify them to participate in projects and they advise us on how best to do it. It's still a new journey, but I think we're conscious now that's the direction to move. Because military veterans are making a strong voice, nothing about us without us. And I think it's a legitimate call. And we've raised it in KZN when we visited jointly. They've raised it in various areas, including Lukanji and them. So we're beginning to see how best to respond, and I'm sure we'll come with amicable solutions because we're working closer together. Then the last part, Chair, is about perhaps an area that, or two small things. One is, one of the challenges that perhaps we may have to tease out here is working closely with local government within the context of intergovernmental relations. Land availability, etc., sometimes proved to be a problem because there has to be land available for houses to be built. On a light note, Ms. Honorable Memes was an MEC in Gauteng. I recall when in an area where I come from in Kagiso, he helped us to break that spine in Mohale City, and we have very decent houses for military veterans. But he can tell you how many battles we fought there for us to break the neck of the local government. But it does become a problem sometimes. Lastly, then, is the area of, let me call it contractors. They're an important player in this game. And sometimes they do not have the sense of urgency that we do have in prioritization of military veterans in terms of empowerment and how we work. And that area does need us to really, if need be, have punitive measures to make sure that they move at the pace we want, they deliver on the quality we want, etc., etc. Thank you very much.
Can I recommend that we, because I think that because of time, we haven't dealt with all the questions. Can I make a recommendation that we provide a report that talks to all the questions that have been raised here? And we can make that report available to you by Tuesday next week.
No, thank you very much. And also, remember now, this is one target that you are watching very closely. So every time you come to present to the committee, expect serious questions around this target, because we are very serious about it. So that's the real reason why we wanted this joint. Thank you very much, and thank you from the officials from the DMV. So I hope you realize now that we take this very seriously. I'm sure you were sitting there sometimes wondering, why are these houses not being built? We are very serious about them. Thank you very much. We can allow you to leave us if you want, if you so want, but Northern Cape is going to present on their business plan, and maybe you can sit and hear if the military veterans are in that business plan, if you want. Northern Cape, because actually what we normally do is to interact with the business plans so that we can be able to... Can they come closer? We really want to give you enough time to do that presentation and interact with it. One of the reasons why Northern Cape is coming is that we have realized that they have the backlog in housing, they have the list, so they should be able to present to us how they're going to clear that backlog. But also, we interested with the previous item that we've discussed, if there's any challenges there.
Chair, I don't know if I have to introduce the team. We've got the HOD here. He's going to lead us in making that presentation. I need to state, Chair, that the timing of this presentation is good because yesterday we had a performance review session with the province. All the four provinces that have not met us. We met with them yesterday. We looked at the figures for the first quarter up to date, so we will be able to respond to most of the questions. The HOD and the Chief Director will be leading us in presenting their presentation. I'll ask him to take over from now.
Thank you, DG and Chairperson. Let me acknowledge the presence of honorable members, the DG and his entourage. I think he has already introduced us. There's no need to go through that. Indeed, the invite from the Portfolio Committee, the Chairperson, requested us to talk to the eradication of the housing backlog in the Northern Cape. So we have attempted to cover that particular request. So indeed, the 53K, that's how it has been registered by Cogstar. It was the MINMEC resolution that now indeed the minister wanted to pilot whether now indeed the backlog can be eradicated or not. Yes, there are different theories around there that others are saying it cannot be eradicated due to the growth in terms of human issues and also the needs that are growing from different families. The presentation outline is that I'm going to cover the background and also the context, and also the assessment and findings that we have done in consultation with the HDA, and also what our recommendations are. Obviously, there are challenges here and there. I'll cover them through the presentation. Part of the background is that now, obviously, we derive that particular mandate from the speech that was delivered by the minister in the budget vote, talking to the issues of that the Northern Cape, we have to complete that backlog. That was 43K. Obviously, you look at the census report, obviously the need has definitely increased. But the minister said, I would like to be able to say within my tenure in this administration that this province has no backlog and naturally, therefore, no shacks. That's our dream and that's how we are also trying to live up to. It's a tall order, but we will travel very fast. The main type of dwellings in the Northern Capes, it has been broken down per district that you are having there or the region. Obviously, the informal dwelling, shack in backyard, informal dwelling, shack not in backyard, and in informal settlement or on a farm. So for 2011, we had 39,604. 2016, census report told us that the report indicates 42,000 plus. So obviously, looking at those different regions there, I mean, in terms of informal settlement, the formal settlements and traditional areas, it varies from one area to the other. Majority there will be around the Pixley, the old Sianda, which is now the ZF Mtau, and the Francis part of, in terms of the population side, there is increase in terms of that. And then our approach to this integrated human settlement, right now, obviously, the projects that are currently running and overlapping will be integrated in ensuring that now, in totality, in an integrated fashion, we address that particular backlog. Obviously, the second bullet talks to that now. Obviously, it will be within the prescripts in terms of the housing chapters that we're having and currently also under review, that we should remain within the baseline that has been allocated to us. All projects must be obviously mixed use, mixed income, and integrated into spatial and economic fabric of the towns and cities to address the unique context of the Northern Cape. As you know, that in terms of the proximity and the distance that you travel from one town to the other, the Northern Cape is very much vast. So those are some of the things that we need to consider. And also we'll raise with the portfolio committee to say access to material, for example, building material, is one of the challenges that we're having as a province. Obviously, the procurement is a strategic matter. Current processes to be reviewed and amended accordingly, based on what the chairperson has just been saying, in terms of the 30%, in terms of people with disabilities, how do you cater for them? In terms of the local economic development, what do you do with those local contractors? So that's what we are looking broadly to say, as a province, how do we cover that? Obviously, the sustainable human settlement, the main objective, obviously, I won't go into detail about that, but obviously we know that, is to make sure that now we deliver, we accelerate. That's why now the president nowadays talks about title deeds in the hand, no more building of houses. Yes, you build, but the ultimate goal is that the impact that will have is that now there must be title deeds in the occupant's hand. Obviously, the quality of housing, the products, we don't need poor workmanship. We have to hold the contractors accountable. Ensure a single efficient formal housing market. That's also a national policy that the colleagues from national, they are also busy through the DG. Restructure and in reintegrate human settlement, the key shift is that now housing is an economic driver for the country and economic asset for beneficiaries. So we need to ensure that now really we do our best as a province with the limited resources that we're having. The approach is that now obviously it's integrated in the center there, but we need viability, we need sustainability and affordability at the same time. Sustainable human settlement is that now we're looking at special transformation and economic integration. Instead of building houses, those grey bricks, RDP houses standing outside the periphery, we need to bring people closer to the economic activities. Viable infrastructure provisioning and life cycle management, functional, responsive and innovative design, easy and close access to range of services, that's why we talk about the amenities. From time to time through the HOD forum, through the different platforms, the PAPIGF of the Premier, we emphasize the integrated development. Obviously, having in mind the IDP of the municipalities, that now we need to ensure that now whenever we've got project pipelines, the different government departments like education will have to indicate where will the school be erected as time goes on. Affordable urban living, financial viability, effective urban management and municipal financial sustainability, because obviously there will have to be that revenue that's supposed to be generated by the municipality out of those houses by rendering services. Environmental sustainability. That's why it's very much critical that we interact from time to time with the Department of Environment and Nature Conservation in the province, in ensuring that the construction of any project there or delivery of housing is in line with the applicable legislative framework. Local job creation and empowerment also is very much critical for us. The Northern Cape, in terms of the spread there, you can look at that, Chairperson and Honourable Members, that now the mapping from 1617 and 1718 in terms of the projects where you have those project pipelines that are running. But the main thing is that now, with our limited budget, for example, for this fiscal year 1718, we've got 402 million. Comparatively speaking to other provinces, they are speaking in terms of billions. We are still that receiving end. That now we really like to urge that Leshabane together with the colleague to say that now, how do we up the Northern Cape so that we can be able to achieve our set objectives. The planned number of units, the scope is currently we've got close to 11,000 that have been completed. I mean, a planned number of units is 11 completed units, 1,600, 3,370 sites ready for construction, and then 6,458 sites to be serviced. Obviously, this needs a budget. With what I've just spoken to that, now we've received 402. Next day, in terms of the baseline that the DG has given me, it talks about 426. Still, is not sufficient. So, but we are in discussion with the DG's office to say how can we up and make sure that now we up our game in terms of delivery. So those are just maps, places of attraction in Northern Cape. Obviously, with this background in terms of the picture there, it's an element of investors coming to the province, obviously, through tourism, through different initiatives that the province has embarked upon. So what makes us unique as a province, apart from being a sunny province, there are a lot of opportunities that are there, honorable members, in terms of the national context and that. For example, national household of the Northern Cape population density growth rate, it was 2%, and then the growth rate is at 1.4%. You look at the national fiscal, how much are we benefiting out of that per capita cost? It's not really enough because there's a lot that we need to do. But also bordering around the issue of access to the bulk, those are some of the issues, Chairperson, that we are also in conjunction with relevant departments, water and sanitation to assist. So as an economy, obviously 6% of mining, 5%, manufacturing are contributing 7% agriculture and 1% is construction. But majority of our economic activities is around mining and also the agriculture, where now you've got those areas where now there is that element of growth. So we'll talk to the mining areas in terms of this presentation. The planning for the future in terms of the population and household projections that we are having in terms of the NDP and also in terms of the census report. Estimated increase of households 2020, it will obviously be to 21,000 there, 2020, 25,000, 2040, 52, 2050, it's 82. So we need to make sure that now we also match in terms of making sure that now we're able to achieve that. In terms of estimations of 1.4% growth rate, that's 0.76% growth in households. Because remember, when you talk to a Gogo there, within the Gogo's household, you find kids, siblings, and then from there, that's how this whole food chain, evolves up until the last recipient in that particular household must also get access, unless the person falls outside the normal BNG house. So contribution to the percentage of contribution to the provincial economy, as I've said, is mining, is agriculture, manufacturing, and construction. But majority is our mining because we've got different mineral resources there. We've got, the diamonds, we've got the iron ore, we've got manganese and that. And there's growth and other mining towns that we have just recently requested the DG for his indulgence is the area of the Akhanese in terms of the Kaima municipality. We've got Akhanese town there where there's an open pit mine there that has just been extended now. The Black Mountain and the other Hamsberg where there are a lot of opportunities that are coming there. We need to look at that to say how do we incorporate those mining towns like the one of the Port Nolo in terms of the Deep Sea Harbour project that is coming there. So we need to ensure that now from the AGA point of view and planning process, we need to be project ready. Tourism and transnational parks, renewable energy. As we know that the Northern Cape, we have benefited a lot out of this the renewable energy of the country. Majority of the projects are in the Northern Cape. And then with the minerals, that value add work and on waste from extraction and the beneficiation, This was the province, always the premier saying that now this is the richest province, but with a sea of poverty. So we need to ensure that now from all these resources there, how can the communities benefit out of this mines? Yes, they do have social corporate responsibilities, these social labor plans that we're engaging from time to time with all those mining companies. Science and technology, the SKA, which is the project in the Northern Cape also, it's one of the areas where there is also growth. We need to look in terms of how do you divert, making sure that now we plot and we plan accordingly. So also in terms of the mineral, the extraction, as I've indicated, in terms of the contribution to the provincial growth and development of the province. Yes, construction is there a little bit because majority of companies there, of the contractors, they are still emerging. Few of them, they are, for example, at grade 9, grade 7, grade 8. But with the involvement, the JV principle that has been applied by most of the departments, we hope and trust that now, at the long run, we will be able to have companies that that will be created at 9 and CE in terms of the levels. The mineral extraction percentage production for SA from Northern Cape, we've got zinc, which is 70%, diamond, and that breakdown that has been given there is very much clear to say that, yes, Northern Cape is very much strong in the mineral, in terms of the mining. However, still, there is a sea of poverty. You don't have to look at it, you can smell it. That's how the premier normally puts it. But there are those opportunities that we can also look at. Social and economic inequalities. In the previous apartheid settlements, that's the breakdown in terms of those the shapes that have been given there to say how was there any improvement from the apartheid settlements, how they used to have special, that has, I mean, with separation functions and all that. Therefore, 21% of the population live, population live, this is less than national figure of 27%. No metro areas, just one secondary city for now, which is Solplaiki, which reports directly to Treasury. We are hoping that now, with the discussions that are going on, we hope that after 5 or 10 years, Solplaiki might be created to, or be upgraded to a metro, because there are small municipalities there around the Francis Barth, like the Katlong and Magareng, and then Pokwane, and also that we can possibly amalgamate and integrate. But these are discussions that are not meant for me. Politicians will just guide us, the administrators, what is the best way. There is a relative large share of colored, white, and Indian in terms of the breakdown in terms of race there. But we are trying our best to make sure that now the equity principle also in terms of the EE plan, we do address that in terms of the benefits, in terms of the economy of the province, in terms of the different gender and races there. Median household 2.2 per month compared to 3.9 in the province. Only 21% of working age people employed compared to 40% in the province, which has now gone up. I think if I'm correct, it's 44% now in terms of the unemployment rate in the province. From 1996 to 2011, population increased by 2%. Obviously, that has got an impact also in terms of the per capita cost, the allocation that we normally get from the DG and other DGs of different departments. 2015, 21% working age, population age over 20 at metric province, rate was 26%, nationally the figure was 29%. So that's the challenge, but we hope and trust that now, with the inauguration of the new university, that people will engage and making sure that now at least they improve their academic qualifications, so that we shouldn't be seen as province that has just been used as a springboard. Link were coming in there, getting a post, and then after 2 months, you get a psychological report that you are wanted there at home. There are challenges. So for people that are remaining there, to continuously doing the work, for them, it's a challenge. So that's why we are saying that now we need to have other strategies through the RPL process to make sure we have people with the requisite skills. Only 9% of the Northern Cape's adult population at metric compared to 30%. The share of adults in the Northern Cape with metric had climbed from 11% in 1996. So that's also a challenge, but we encourage them through the adult basic education and training program, the ABET, through the education department, that is there to make sure that now there is an improvement in terms of the literacy level of the province. So the province, 8% no income, 20% unemployed, 44% semi or unskilled labor. So that's a challenge. You say, as a province, with that low skill base, how do you grow the economy? So it is a challenge, but there is a provincial growth and development strategy of the province that is being reviewed through the PGDP. So we hope and trust that now the figures and information might change in terms of the picture. Service delivery. So Plaiki accounts for 20% of the province's population compared to 40% of the national population living in metro areas and secondary city. As I've said, the Francis Barrett is the biggest region in the province there. And then 27% of households in Northern Cape have running water in their houses or yards compared to 73% in 1996. So there is an achievement. Slowly, but we are going in that direction. 92% have electricity, up from 64% in 1996. Nationally, 73% of households have running water and 5% electricity. Municipal expenditure per person came to 5,500 in 2015, 2016, compared to 5,900 nationally. So these are figures that are very much important so that now the other members can have an idea to say how, as a province, what type of challenges do we have and what is the best remedy in this regard. So applying with 20% of population raised 86% of all municipal rates and tariffs in the province. What we are saying is that now, so Plaiki as a municipality, the secondary city, is the only municipality with a cashback budget. In most cases, majority of municipalities in the province there, they still have to collect and generate the revenue. But at least so Plaiki, they are, I mean, sound in terms of the bank balance. So Plaiki received 10% of current and 8% of capital transfers and subsidies, mostly from the national government. Still, it spent 7,000 per person compared to 5,100 per person in the other municipalities in the Northern Cape, which means in terms of the revenue, they are able to collect also, but they are not only grant dependent. They can also use other revenue streams to ensure that now they still cover other projects. But majority of the municipalities, they are grant dependent. That's why in some instances they are found wanting in terms of the DORA. Five key towns in the five districts in terms of the area, the percentage per province population. As you can see the chairperson that now, the area in terms of kilometer, the radius there, the biggest will be 126, which is the Namakwa there, followed by Pixley and then ZF Ngao, Francis Barr, then 13. But however, in terms of numbers, population, as you can see, the table, that column 4, is very much self-explanatory to say that, now, yes, indeed, Francis Barr, it is the biggest. However, in terms of the circumference, is very much small. Province, in terms of the percentage, province 33, those are the breakdowns in terms of percentage density per kilometer square. Obviously, you can see that now there's a high concentration. That's why we have said we have recommended DG and Honorable Chair that now Solplaiki Municipality, the MM Tanjeni, Khaskonyana, Honorable Chair, they are also nominated as part of the IIUDF, the Integrated Urban Development Framework, because that's where a lot of business is also taking place. Development of towns and cities must be holistic. That's our view, that's the National Department's view, to say that we have to have that integrated approach, but it should be holistic, not piecemeal, the way it used to be in the past. And that's the challenge in the North. You find that now 100 houses have been there, the tender has been approved 10 years back. You find that now still you allocate based on your small baseline that you're receiving. You need to share that piece of cake amongst all those guys to say that now. But also from the cost-benefit analysis, you find that now, ultimately the projects are not economically viable because now the poor guy must now build 5 houses, 10 houses there. Ultimately now, whole money is being spent only on the transportation of the material to reach those particular destinations. Vibrant living and movement spaces for people, that's what we are saying that now, in terms of integrated development. Future demand and needs have implications also on the space. The densities also in terms of the population, movement capacities also might be limited as time goes on. Infrastructure carrying capacity, obviously the bulk there. Ecologically carrying capacity to sustain human life, because there will be that competition as time goes on between human and also with the animals in terms of the ecological carrying capacity. Connectivity to their wider regions is very much important, because the only way that we need to improve is to ensure that now there is a better IT system that is there, to ensure that now people have got access to services rather than going to the nearest town. In that way, we'll be curbing what is known as urbanization by making sure that now we localize, we develop, we should make sure that now those particular regions, they are also economically viable. Generate and sustaining sufficient bulk water and power requirements. So this is very much critical. We find that now in some of the project pipelines, municipalities have got their own informal settlements, but they do not even inform ESCOM. Yes, we do have the, those ones that are defaulters as far as ESCOM debt is concerned, but we find that now they do not even inform ESCOM in terms of their notified maximum demand. So their M&D will then obviously go up, increasing their penalties in terms of that debt that is due to ESCOM. Obviously, sufficient bulk water is a challenge. We need to have serious discussion. That's why we had meeting the MEC and discussion with the Minister of Water and Sanitation to say how do you make sure that now those allocations or even the MIG grant is being optimally utilized or linked to this 53K project rather than just sporadic projects running parallel or different areas. We need to ensure that now we have an integrated approach, making sure that now there is beneficiation in terms of what the MIG grant is talking about. Integrate innovative means and technologies. Obviously, you talk about the alternative housing technology. That's what I think last week with the DG in NYSNA, we had a meeting around this, what are the technologies that are there. But obviously, this will depend on the reception from the communities. But through marketing, talking to the communities, because we do have a challenge in terms of access to building material. But you need to ensure that now you go out to communities and you market yourself to say this is the technology that is there. Because people still believe in brick and mortar. But there are other technologies but they have to comply with the CSIR and the South African Bureau of Standards. So I couldn't now come back after 10 years and complain about the poor workmanship on the projects. And so access and affordability to the services, this is very much critical. As I've said, the challenge with the high unemployment rate in the Northern Cape, it impacts on the performance of the municipalities to also generate their revenue. That's why Treasury normally talks about cost-reflective tariff, but it's difficult to implement cost-reflective tariff in the municipality without even consulted in terms of your committee engagements, making sure that your tariffs that you agree upon as a council, they are really cost-reflective. But the point is that now you look at the affordability. You can have higher tariffs, but will your community be able to afford? Distant housing and in integrated neighborhoods or mixed-use zones. So obviously, we have moved away from freestanding houses. We've got the mixed income. That's what we've tried to do. You go to Katu in Ramagara there, municipality Lerato Park, it's integrated. You go to other areas in the mining towns, we are trying to make sure that now they're integrated so that at least those that cannot afford, those that can afford then be able to offset and assist in terms of the revenue in the municipality. That's the basic principle in terms of the free basic services. Five districts have unique features. For example, to be in short, corridors will develop economic stimulation. Housing development must be linked to corridors to create sustainable lives. Sustainable human settlement requires mixed income and groups and mobility to be viable. So that is the map of the Northern Cape in terms of the proximity, in terms of the distance from one region to the other. So we need to ensure that now we have to utilize those unique features that are there within the province per region. Development of corridors is very much important, because which means that now our development must be in line. You look at that green one. That green one is that one of the deep sea harbor that is busy in the pipeline through the Department of Mineral Resources, where now they are busy upgrading that port to make sure that now all the big ships also can be able to port there, and also business, economics. So obviously, that forms part of the Rasmusveld municipality. It's along the Alexander Bay mine, diamond mine there. So the project there is coming. So obviously, our development and housing establishment or human settlement must go in that particular direction. So you look at this, for example, the access also to our neighbors. We do have twinning program with the Namibians, that nearest province next to the Northern Cape. We do have some arrangements, discussions, bilaterals that are going on quarterly basis, led by the premier and the mayors of those towns in Namibia. So you look at the solar corridors in yellow. It's very much opportunity that is there for us in ensuring that now, from time to time, we speak to the different departments that have got those special economic zones and all in those areas, in ensuring that now housing should be driven in that particular direction. That's why now it will definitely be one of the motivators to the DGA and his team, Chairperson, that more funding should be diverted to the Northern Cape for us to be able to contain and deal with these housing issues. The Gamagara corridor, that's the big project that are coming there in terms of the mining area there, that the mining activities that are going on there is very much critical in terms of land acquisition. There are challenges there and around the Gamagara corridor is the issue of the land, access to land. So through ADA, we are currently busy looking at having access to some of the land that is accessible for us to have developments going on. Then the ecotourism corridor along that particular area, we are also promoting that. That's the Transfrontier Park also there along that area, neighboring Botswana and also Namibia. And then also along the Namibia, there along the Rattlesveld also, people do have access to those particular areas. So movement there is also not limited. So there's a lot that we can talk about, Chairperson, around those development along those corridors that we need to look at as a province. Obviously, we've got fishing and marine culture that is going on there. Gamagara corridor, all those corridors, I did speak to those issues, Chairperson. Land restitution and the CCRP. So it's very much critical, Chairperson, that now. Obviously, some of the reasons do have a challenge in terms of access to land, because you can develop, you can build houses, but if you don't have access to land, then there's a challenge. That's why now through HDA, their task, their mandate is to make sure that now land is being acquired, but making sure that now you bring people closer to the communities. Sustainable human settlement, obviously there, I won't go too much into that. Those are just, Chairperson, those are areas that indicate to say the pictures, how can we make the Northern Cape to be accessible and making sure the investment is going on. Assessment and the findings, Chairperson, for now is that the NDP proposed that by 2050 there has to be inequalities in the land market, stronger measures to reconfigure housing land policy to accommodate diverse households and that. Spatial, I will not go into detail around that 2050 vision. The criteria, the capacity of bulk infrastructure and connections, the freestanding houses under 500,000, no rate levies and all that, access to jobs, I think those, the chart there, the picture there, it tells us to say that now for us, financial sustainability for local municipalities, economic viability for citizens, social life and all that. So all those the factors impacting on us as a department to ensure that now we do have the plans that are there in terms of the SDF and that. Findings, Chairperson, is that now obviously mixed income and mixed housing typology is limited. Mixed land uses evident by limited and not consistent. Backlog figures, as they have been tabulated, they are indicated. Fit between spatial development and economic opportunities is not tight. Mining towns will require special attention linked to the life cycles of the mines and the empowerment value chain in construction also. The backlog figures per municipality, as you can see there, Chairperson, the highest figure there is Solplaiki, followed by Davelkraper is the new municipality after the amalgamation of Mir and Karais, and then going up with the others. The smallest one where there's a need will be the Kamisberg. Mining and the housing projects. We've got the mining towns, the protocols have been signed off between ADA and also human settlement. We've got the Tantabani there, we've got Gamagara, and also we've got Khafe Khonyana. So those are municipalities that we are involved in terms of the mining towns. However, we have registered the others, as I've said, under the Kaima municipality and also the Rachtersfeld municipality, the Port Noloth and also the Akhanis mining towns. Achievements preliminary 2016-17 there, that's the performance, Chairperson, that we have made thus far. In terms of the town planning, 2,900, servicing of sites, 2,099, units, 1,449, and then from there, the other in terms of the needs, 3,222 there. The plan deliverables for 2017 was the one that has been signed currently under review. That's the budget allocation, Chairperson, in terms of the CRU 57 plus financial individual subsidy. That's the budget allocation going up to 280 million. So, but we are hoping that we will achieve that with the limited resources, town planning, and then servicing of sites and units. So we need to make sure that now we really up our game. But for now, based on the report that we received last week from the DG's office, that now at least we have achieved for the first quarter. The recommendations towards the sustainable human settlement, obviously those corridors integrated approach, making sure that now we have to spread and then plot our housing delivery, is to ensure that now road linkages and provincial spatial plan. Currently, municipalities, majority of them, they are busy reviewing their SDFs. There is a provincial spatial plan that the premier's office is entrusted with. So in consultation with the municipalities, we would achieve. Investment opportunities in terms of town planning, servicing of sites, units there, that's the breakdown, Chairperson. We hope and trust that now moving forward, we will be able to deliver and also upscale our delivery. Available even with a need for bulk, as I've said, the main challenge there is the bulk. You can deliver, we can work hard, but as long as there's a challenge in terms of bulk, then there's a problem. Those regions there, they are able to yield those even that has been serviced, but the main thing is that now we need bulk, Chairperson. On that note, Chair, I will drop my encounter. Thank you, Chair.
Can you give him water to drink?
Thank you so much. Maybe before I ask the DG, the members to ask questions, I thought I heard the last question, one of your last comments saying the DG say, the note from the DG's office says you have reached your targets for the first quarter. How so, when there is zero in the military veteran? I'm just asking the DG, not you.
We look at the performance figures for the first quarter, Chair, and we can present those figures. They're doing far much better than they were last year in the first quarter. In fact, I'm sure Joe will talk to this because he chaired the performance review session. We felt that this province, Mpumalanga and Eastern Cape, are the only three provinces that have exceeded or managed to meet their first quarter targets. So far, the graph looks good, Chair, in the Northern Cape. I don't know if Joe wants to talk to it because I wasn't there.
Thank you, Chairperson. There are two parts. I'll just make additional inputs. Insofar as the performance of the province for the first quarter against the business plan, our disappointment is not so much on the what was planned and delivered and exceeded. It's more around this plan, because it is this plan, Chairperson, that we would have preferred it in the plan. Let me repeat that. The department has approved the business plan for the province for this financial year, which is business as usual. So on business as usual, Chairperson, they are doing fine. But the problem in the Northern Cape is not business as usual. It's this upscaling. And therefore, we are happy. So maybe it's the higher grade of performance that we're looking for. So yes, the plan is here. The province is working to put it together. It's a highly strategic priority for the province to be able to upscale delivery. And therefore, we're calling the province to a much, much higher standard of performance than just meeting the targets that are there. Chairperson. If I may just add one part, because this is a strategic priority for not only the province but for the sector as a whole, what becomes important is that this plan becomes a national plan, as opposed to becoming just a provincial plan. And therefore, even as we reprioritize the funding allocations, we will consider the Northern Cape going forward as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. I hope we understand what is being said. They have passed, they've got 50%, but because of what is put on them as per seeing that can they clear the backlog by the end of this financial year. So they, even though they've done well, they have not done well as much as they should. We expect a distinction from them. That's what it's saying in summary. But can I then allow questions of clarity and questions? And at some point, probably in the discussion, just before I allow you, Honorable Ngagcabashe, you might have to come and step in here. I'm being harassed by Umshobo Wenene. They want to report on this thing of military veterans. So at some point, I'll just step up and talk to them online, live. They want to hear what are we discussing. So can I just then take questions? Honorable Stolle, I know you were almost a resident of this province, but let me start with you. Honorable Stolle, followed by Honorable Soli, followed by Honorable the resident itself, Honorable Magausi, and then Honorable Memin. Oh, I didn't see you, Honorable Bam. Honorable Bam, yes. No, you didn't have a hand up. No, you have it now. Yes. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Honorable Nagaibabash. Okay, can we start? Honorable Tony.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, we must thank the presenter because it shows that there's some depth info from their presentation. It shows that their problems are in place. But my concern, Chairperson, is the backlogs on housing because it doesn't seem that they are moving. Because if you check 2011, there were 30,604, and 2016, 42,246. Instead of it decreasing, it increase. That's the concept, Chairperson. And the informal settlement, because we did went to oversight in Western Cape, in Northern Cape, but there were some informal settlements there. What I want to find out, how far is that eradication of informal settlement?
I think finish that sentence. You went to oversight in the last term.
Yes. Yes, Chairperson. And the other one, Chairperson, is this one. What I want to get here, because when we were there, they showed some progress on CRU. But here it seems that there is no proper planning again, because the only 50-something, only 56 units in CRU, if they can give us some. And they are failing in military veteranship. I think they will help us to understand why, because, and what I want to find out about there, because when we were there, we checked, we saw some dwellings, that's what we call it, the backyard dwellings. Are they moving, or they are still in that situation? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Before I allow the next person to speak, a message has just come in to say we must try and finish at by what about 12 because of the memorial service in the old assembly that starts at 12:30. So as you ask questions, summarize. So I just thought I must just remind you. Honorable Sol.
I'll be very brief, Chairperson. I feel like I was on a blind date because the document was new to me. So it's very difficult to have insightful questions to deal with it. But I just wanted to get from the HOD whether there are any discussions with the mining houses, because in terms of what's stated in the document, their contribution there, I mean, it just talks to mining towns, and I just want to get a sense of whether that provision is done by the department or in collaboration with the mining houses, because they also have, you know, an obligation to contribute towards addressing the housing vacancy law. And if there aren't any formal engagements with the mining houses, you know, well, what's the issue there? Thanks.
Very much, Honorable Soli. Just a disclaimer there that the report itself got to the staff by Friday. It's them that didn't distribute it. The department did its job. Honorable Makasi.
Thank you, Chair. Let me join my colleagues by welcoming the report from the Northern Cape presented by High Energy from the HOD, I must say. But we will be following up HOD on what you have presented today. We are residents of the Northern Cape, and that's my constituency. But my concern remains the high level of informal settlements in our province that are mushrooming. And it seems as if the backlog that the department has been speaking about, we're actually not going to get there in terms of curbing the backlog. So I must say, Chairperson, the energy that is being presented here today, we must see it on the ground. We must see projects running on the ground. We must not only see them on paper. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Macaulay. Honorable Memes.
Now, thank you very much, Chairperson. Joining my colleagues in welcoming the report that was presented very energetically. In fact, this report is quite showing that the HOD and his team, they understand why we are paying them every month. We are quite happy that you have given us this kind of information. In fact, it's going more than a report to us, but you are also marketing your province. That's what I've seen. You are a good marketer. You are promoting your province almost in all respect. You are a good ambassador of your province. So you have done well. So you forgot to tell us your name, and the DG the same. They didn't tell us your name. So they think you are HOD, you see. So that's your name. So just few things that even performing people, we need distinction. I think the chair and the DG have just said. Remember, you are the smallest in terms of the population. So look into that. You are the vast in terms of the land situation. So. You must those are the contradictions that you must work through. While we quite happy with what you are presenting as informative, educational about your area, you know, you have gone to details. You help us not to Google about other stats. You just gave them the town. You see, so we appreciate that. It means you've given yourself time to update members. But, you know, DG and the HOD, sometimes it has now become a norm that you present excellently. But when we go on the ground, we don't always found this. For example, in page 4, when they discuss the approach, they talk of easy and close access, you see, to a range of services and amenities. I like that statement. But we have gone to our townships. There's always, we are short of amenities. It's not, it's a general statement, HOD, don't worry, don't think it's about you. It's about even the person next to you, because it's a problem. So we have not gone, we have not responded to what the Constitution of the Republic is saying, reverse the imbalances of the past. Is in the first, in the emblem of the Constitution, preamble of the Constitution, it says must reverse. So we're not reversing. In the suburbs, they have everything. You know, when you talk amenities, go to the suburbs, you'll see amenities. Go to the township, you'll see something like amenities. So in many townships, beautiful townships, you don't even have walls, you don't have clinics, you don't have all the let alone schools, you see. So we are building human settlement. We should be inclusive of all these amenities. But it's still a talk. We are not yet, we have not walked the talk.
So which means it's not really to you only, but it's also to the national department that our townships that we're putting up
must walk the talk.
You know, it's nice to see all these statements that are written here. Viable infrastructure, still in page 4, viable infrastructure in the approach. It's good to say that, but when we go on the ground, the infrastructure is not that viable on the side of the place, to be precise, which means we have not reversed the imbalances of the past. Apartheid is still with us in South Africa. Oh no, I think I'm covered by my colleague on the mining towns and their role in social responsibility, because it's by law that they must do their part. And it's a duty also to check if they are responding properly in terms of the mining charter. It's not like we are doing them a favor. I think I always talk about the flips because I don't want a strike led by police, led by teachers, led by nurses, led by educated people who are in the middle, lower middle class. So you only have, you know, very few there. They belong to just one school. So it's clear you need to move. I think because of time, thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Pam.
Thank you, Chair. I also appreciate the presentation. If you are last, you are always having very little to say. My concern would have been on the money, on the development or assistance of housing development by the mining companies. That has been addressed. And we see a lot of abject poverty around there. The presentation is quite glorious in talking about the economic development activities around there, but there is always abject poverty when you come there and a lot of primitiveness, especially in the rural areas. But in the towns, you see a lot of development and nice things going on. What I wanted to ask about as well is you talked about the JV, the joint venture of operations. It would be nice to know what the ratios are between within these JV operations. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Malatabash.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start by saying we really, this time, appreciate this kind of a presentation. And we applaud the Northern Cape for the improvement and the report that you have received from the DG that you have met your target for the first quarter in terms of the spending on the budget. And I'm particularly just raising only one or two points because starting with this one. Because at some stage, I think it was 2015, we had to send back the department because of the way the budget was presented to us they had to reconcile the reporting mechanism. And this improvement shows that if you create a stability in the department, it's what you get.
Yeah.
I hope going down below yourself, you're creating a stability. If not, please do, because when you come back, we'll ask you, what about the middle management under yourself? So we are really particularly happy. Although we are seeing some gaps, there are a number of for Neil questions, but I'm not going to get into that today. I just want you to tell us. We're told by the DMV that most of your military vets are a statutory one, but the priority to the question for me is the priority one, which is a non-statutory. How have you attended to that priority list, so to speak, in relation to that 38, and when are you going to complete those? And then when we're elaborating on the military vets construction of houses, we're already here.
and I think you had the benefit of that. The joint V, usually they are problematic. They tend to be problematic. Now the last point, would like you to make sure that on your contractor agreements, you build in a punitive clause that will assist you. If you haven't done that, please do that so that you prevent number of issues that you have raised. And in the interest of time, the chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honourable member. Just probably before you respond, one of the in the report, which is understandable, the cry is about the bulk infrastructure, which we understand Northern Cape being the province that it is. But we just wanted to check in your meeting targets and spending. I know that the department had said 2% of your HSDG must be used for infrastructure to try and mitigate for the need. How are you doing there in terms of that? As you respond, thank you very much.
No, thanks, Chair. Let me also thank the positive commendations that we've received. It is encouraging that we have to up our game and leave the bar higher and higher. In terms of the backlog, as I've said, it stretches from the previous years, but obviously in terms of the planning, it will form part of the integrated 53K. 2011, as Honorable Sithole has indicated that now, obviously there are running projects that are overlapping. You find that in a small town, there are 50 beneficiaries. After 50 beneficiaries, ends up in 20 because some are going out for greener pastures. Come back, then it's difficult to also trace and locate. But come back, someone has been appointed as a contractor to build 50 houses. So we end up now making sure that now, on a small scale, you give this person 5, 20, there 50, so that the project can just be completed. However, in consultation with the municipality, we end up closing some of the projects to say that now it is not economically viable because none of the contractors would like to go down to build only 2 houses, having to establish the plant and all that. So those are things that we are engaging with the municipality. However, for the information of the portfolio committees that now we have taken over housing delivery. In the past, houses was a competency of the municipalities, but we have taken it over now in terms of the concurrence that the Constitution is talking about, that now is the prerogative of the national and also provincial departments. So we are working closely with the departments, the municipalities. Obviously, in terms of the amenities that the MMS has raised, that now we are having a steering committee that is led by the department, making sure that now through the HOD forum we report all departments through the IDP engagements. I think in many years we ultimately had a session in Upington where we brought in all the municipalities together with the departments under one roof to say that now when you plan a project, erection of a clinic, for example, in the next coming 2 years, municipalities do not want cash in their account. What they want is just a letter of commitment so that they can put it in their IDP. And that assessment report, it is available. That is very much available and has also been used by the municipality. That now integrated development has been encouraged. All sector departments through the PIGF, Premier is always positive about that role of the sector departments. First, obviously, we need to up our game. That's what we have said in the state of the province of address of the Premier and the MEC, that now we are going to go out on that road. So, yes, from time to time we get signal applications here and there, because what we are saying, it should not be projectized. Any person that needs a first house somewhere, right there in the rural areas, the person must have access to that. So, but we do have a specific unit that talks to that. Military vets, in terms of our target, Honorable Member, our target from the DG was, they gave us an allocation of 24, but we have exceeded that by delivering 38. Those houses are completed. They are ready to be handed over to the beneficiaries. Unfortunately, coincidentally, the president couldn't do it on the 8th. He was supposed to have done it on the 8th. Now there was a sitting, the house sitting here. But on the 9th, he was there. But there is a plan to make sure that now. I think Honorable Sithole saw them. Beautiful houses compared to other provinces. I'm not here to blow my own trumpet. But the point is that now is quality housing. Face brick, tiled, big carports and all that, is the very much beautiful houses. Even the Select Committee on Finance were there, and security. They paid a visit to those 38 houses. However, the challenge remains the same as the DG has said, to say that now, verification and validation of all the beneficiary list. Because sometimes you go through that list, there are people here, 1980, is a vet and all that, is a veteran, I mean a veteran. So we are asking those kind of questions. Please, DMV, can you please verify and validate this list, whether it is correct? So that's why there was a challenge, just making sure that now it finds expression in our plan this year. However, we have written letters, several letters to the DMV. They are about to respond, and from the, with the revision of this, we'll be able to accommodate that. But the point is that now we have delivered.
They are about to respond. They haven't responded.
They have not yet responded. The letters that I've seen, that I've signed, that I've appended my signature, we did write letters to say, please, here is the list of all the military vets that have been given to us from the province. But you'll find that most is the provincial database differs from the one of national. So that's why we said the most reliable one will be that one of national, so they can be able to inform the province. But those consultations are going on. I will also request my colleague, as I've said, for the mining towns, obviously, we do meet. Meetings are being chaired by the DG. I'm deputizing him in terms of the steering committee. We do meet mines. The last mine that we have met is the Black Diamond Vendetta. That we are trying, because whether the mine lives, the lifespan is 1,000 years, definitely that mining town will be a ghost town after 1,000 years. So we had discussions, we were discussing with this Vendetta, of which they are saying that development must take place in Akhanes. And Akhanes is a small population of the mine workers. Ultimately, obviously, the mine worker must go back home and all that. But what we are saying, the SDF of that particular municipality of Kaima, it makes provision that development must take place in Pofada, which is the main town. So that's why we are saying that now these houses also, NAM has come out clear to say these houses must be given to the workers. Because whether you are going to build in Akhanes after 1,000 houses, those houses will just be dilapidated and not been taken care of. But those are discussions that we're having with the Vendetta mine to say that the development must go out to all those small towns. Obviously, the bulk, I'll request my colleagues just to make some additions where I've just, so they can just be able to, I'm Bafe Dile, Shadrach Lenkwe, the head of department, with effect from the 1st of May, having worked in Cockstar since 2008 as a chief director of corporate services. My CV is very long. I don't want to.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Iketle Zomogodi, and I'm the program manager for human settlements. Just a quick one on the informal settlements. We've made significant progress in terms of the national upgrading support program in Salt Lake municipality. We did have a bit of a slowdown in terms of delivery with regards to Post-Maspek, which is Tanzabani municipality, Khamakhara and Khasekhonyana, which is our mining towns. But if the members recall, at our last visit under the leadership of HOD Denver van Heerden, we reported the geotechnical challenges in the mining towns at the time. So what we've been investing in since that period up to now was to conduct the investigations into the dolomite study so that we can start development in those areas. The great news is that in Kuruman town, in the informal settlement that was also part of the NASP, we have now got approval from the Council of Geoscience to proceed with development in that area. And we've got a positive response for Katelopele as well for that informal settlement, and Zanzabani municipality is also looking very good in terms of development. At least none of the sites have been declined, so we are able to proceed with development in those areas. So I think that when we start submitting our detailed plans, as Mr. Leshabane said, we will start to find expression of those informal settlements. But in Salt Lake, where we haven't had dramatic soil conditions, we've been able to deliver. So that looks good in that sense. And in terms of the 2% bulk, HSDG, because of those studies that we were conducting, ma'am, we had not yet utilized the ring-fenced amount that we could apply for. But in our first draft business plan that we'll be submitting to the department on the 31st of August, we will make use of that allocation so that we can assist the mining towns. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
I just wanted to make an input, Chairperson, with your permission, on the JV matter, that indeed it is a concern for us, because we find that now two companies coming together agreeing, and then from there, in terms of taxation, they will then use alternatively the tax number or the VAT number of the other company. So, but we had a workshop with the contractors where we encouraged them, especially those big ones, 9, G9 down up to 6, to say, please partner with this small and up-and-coming SMEs or contractors. So at the least, they shouldn't be deemed to be emerging, because in the ambitions of the Premier, always they are raising some concerns that from 1994, they have been emerging. For how long must they emerge? This pipeline is very long, Premier. So we are trying to make sure that now JVs go in terms of those, the clauses, the agreements, conditions under which it has been established, they have to respect that. But we advise from time to time to make sure that now the JV delivers according. I know that there's a lot of disputes and conflicts amongst two or three companies that have JV. But the idea is to empower the other one, chairperson. Regarding the mines, there are different houses. Kumba, they're doing a lot, beautiful job in Katu area in terms of CRUs that they've built. The only thing is the management of the CRUs. We don't want challenges like Konobia where now people, yes, accept the conditions, but after 2 years, now they claim that now it is their RGP, whatever, it's their benefits, they are also taxpayers and all that. So we want the management company, like supply also for the Lerato Park CRUs. They've turned out the company might be appointed anytime, so they're able to manage those CRUs. But they are at an advanced stage in that is holding compared to your overset. I think the last one, the first one, is 99.9 that now obviously they will end over. Second one is too dead, 90 now. So there is movement. Yes, here and there they will be delivering some challenges here and there, but they are about to finish and wrap up and end over all the CRUs. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, HOD. We now know that when we invite Northern Cape, you must be fed to speak because you've got the energy. But in a positive way. Thank you so much. DG, your last word?
Submitted to Treasury as part of the MTEC submission to increase the budget of the Northern Cape. Unfortunately, it was turned down by Midcombat. From our side, we were hoping that Treasurer will agree with the 400 million rands that we wanted to increase. We wanted to double that budget, but we didn't win. And they wanted us to focus first on dealing with bulk infrastructure issues before we upscale the top structure. We have requested this year again, for next year, to increase the budget of Northern Cape. We still have the view that if we can increase that budget, we will be able to deal with the backlog, especially in those mining towns, because the challenge that we're experiencing now is that some of those towns are growing, and the informal settlements is mushrooming, and our response is very slow. If we can increase the budget, we'll be able to target all of those growing towns. But Chair, the final say is with National Treasury. I must say, Chair, that Treasury has asked us that if we do increase the budget of Northern Cape, we will have to agree with the MECs and the HODs, because there will be no new money. The fiscal is not doing well right now. The HODs agreed on a top slicing of their budget to accommodate Northern Cape. But we don't know if Treasury is going to agree this year. But last year, we didn't win. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. We're done with that report, and thank you very much to the Northern Cape. I think with that report, it will be one of those provinces that we will have to visit towards the end of our term, to see if the promises and what they are telling us is happening. So we will be visiting you as our term goes to the end, so that we allow you time to clear this battle. The only thing left is the minutes, which Honorable Makabashe is going to allow the members to adopt, the minutes of the 20th of June 27, when we dealt with the business plan of Free State and Eastern Cape.
Thank you very much. Because it's just a few minutes, a few seconds, please remain department so that we don't get members don't get distracted. We're dealing with the minutes as it has been outlined. And sorry that it's not appearing on the agenda. Can I have an indication whether the minutes are a true reflection of the discussion of that particular meeting or any amendments? I see Honorable Memezi.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I do note that we did receive information in our gadgets indicating the issues for discussion, although the agenda was not updated properly. So I do move that indeed the minutes reflect what was discussed on the 20th of June. So I move for adoption.
I have a proposal. Any seconder? Seconder? Or in, are we in agreement? Honorable Kurai?
I second, Chair.
The minutes have been seconded and duly adopted. Any other matter? I think other than that, the meeting is adjourned, reminding the members to attend the memorial service. To the venue for the memorial service? All the assembly, and then I think it's in session now. Thank you very much, both department, DMVA, Human Settlements, and the Northern Cape Province, and the members. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.